My name is Chris Reardon, alongside my co-host Dan McHugh, and we are back, folks, after an unintended week off. We had some logistical issues and just really couldn't get together last week, but that's okay because the top story is kind of off this week, as in the Baltimore Ravens, Dan, who are now heading to the Super Bowl with a chance to win their second title. No football this week, so I think it was if there was ever a time to take a week off, last week was probably the best time. So yeah, glad to be back. How are you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Back? I mean, it's cap season is back in full force, and we'll get into that. And it hasn't been pleasant. Anyway, we'll get into that. But yeah,
well, it's nice to have cap season, but the way that it's gone so far has not been nice. So that's
how about? I mean, what else to say? The Ravens are in the Super Bowl, so that's pretty.
That's our top story.
AFC champs. Pretty amazing.
That's our top story this week. We're, of course, going to spend plenty of time talking about the Baltimore Ravens win the AFC Championship game and preview the Super Bowl matchup, the Har Bowl, as I've seen many people call it.
The Har Bowl, yeah. Chris, what's his face? You know, Chris Bourbon on ESPN. The Har Bowl, anyway.
So, yeah, we've got that. We have, of course, the cap stuff to talk about. First four games have not gone so well for team out of D.C. Wizards news is actually really good for once, Dan, so it's kind of a fun time to get Wizards fan.
Yeah.
Got that to talk about. We've got some Nationals news, some Orioles news, some good news from the Orioles side, and some sad news. And then, of course, we have a little bit of D.C. United to round out the show. Still, I think just too much right now. We're not going to be able to focus too much on college sports just yet. That'll be right around the corner. But like we said, Dan, the lead story this week is the Baltimore Ravens. And, you know, hey, they did it. I think, you know, to start the year, a lot of people were expecting this team to be a Super Bowl contender. And they came out of the gates playing like they were a Super Bowl contender. But as the year went along, you know, they hit a couple speed bumps. And it looked like, okay, yeah, they're going to be a playoff team, but maybe this is not going to be quite, you know, quite the year that people were expecting. But in the end...
A lot of doubters, especially when Ray Lewis got hurt, that, you know, this is not going to go well, you know, early in the season anyway. When Ray Lewis got hurt, I think a lot of people were like, okay, they're not going to be that good this year. Or they may make the playoffs and get knocked out.
Well, I mean, look, Ray Lewis is certainly the leader of the team, but he isn't the team. They were still able to, you know, pull out some big wins without him, but they certainly going to miss the guy. Fans all over Baltimore will. I think NFL fans in general will miss the electrifying player that Ray Lewis is. And I'm looking forward, like I think we talked about on our last show, to seeing him hopefully in the commentator's booth, or, you know, maybe replacing Deion Sanders or Michael Irvin on the...
I think he's going to ESPN, I've read. That's what I've heard. So he's known to be replacing either of them. Maybe he'll be replacing Keyshawn Johnson, hopefully. On who I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Let's start out off by talking about the AFC Championship game. Of course, it was a rematch of the previous year's AFC Championship game, and it was a close game last year. And you know, unfortunately for the Ravens, Tom Brady and the Patriots, you know, ended up coming out on top. Very different story this time. Just a good all-around team win. We didn't see a ton of Ray Rice in this match, which is usually, I think, the main ingredient you want to put in your recipe for a Ravens win, but he still did enough. Flacco was spectacular in the game, throwing for over 300 yards, hitting Torrey Smith on a number of big plays.
Three touchdown passes.
And Anquan Boldin, of course, was, I guess, the star of the receiving core in that one. Pitta played great. And then the defense came up good again, and... what can we say? I mean, it was a dynamic performance all around from the team, and the way they've gone through the postseason and the way, I guess, they finished their last competitive match in the regular season against the Giants, they've been on a roll ever since that loss to the Redskins, and pretty exciting times for the DMV. You know, I'm a Redskins fan, so like I said, it would be a little more exciting for me if it was the Redskins, but if it can't be the Redskins, why not be a local team? And I'm seeing a lot of Skins fans not rooting for the Ravens, Dan. It's kind of
There's a lot of that, and I don't get that. I think that the Redskins fans are maybe having some sour grapes. I mean, I don't know. I look, I I, for one, have talked about this on the show before. I have an affection for Baltimore, mostly because of being an Orioles fan growing up, like you and I, and many people in the D.C. area our age, when we were in elementary school and whatnot, there was no baseball in D.C., so we all liked the Orioles, you know, locally, for baseball. And I don't understand this so much resentment towards the Ravens. I don't, you know, I don't buy into it. I think it's great that the other local team is doing well, and why can't we root for them, you know?
That's the way I feel. Like I said, I will not go out and be a bandwagon, you know, fan and start, you know, going out and buying purple and black gear and pretending I'm a Ravens fan, because I'm not. But it's a local team.
But I did hear, I was listening to 106.7 The Fan, LeVar and Duke, the other day, and they were talking about this. I actually called into the show, and they cut me off because I told them I was rooting for the Ravens in the Super Bowl. That ticked them off. But they couldn't figure out why, I guess, that the ratings in the D.C. area for the Ravens games this year are up dramatically. And I said, look, you know, there's a lot of love for Baltimore in the D.C. area. I said, I don't think these people are converting. They're not, like, turning on the Redskins and going to become Ravens fans full-time. But I said, there's a lot of love. There's a lot – the Orioles, you know, a lot of people love the Orioles in the D.C. area. And so I said, I don't – you know, I'm one of those people. I have a lot of affection for Baltimore. That means I said, when the Ravens play the Redskins, I boo the Ravens, of course. And they and I said, but I'm rooting for the Ravens in the Super Bowl. And they got ticked off and they hung up on me. But
what did they say after that?
They didn't say a whole lot. They well, Chad Duke was like, I don't understand all these Oriole fans in the D.C. area either. It's like it's not their market and something or another. And I'm like, you know, they seem to not be a big fans of Baltimore. So.
Well, the good thing about our show, Dan, is it's the DMV Sports Wire.
Yeah.
I mean, we certainly think you know, a lot of people we talk to certainly feel that this area is kind of connected. It's a, you know, kind of one big region. So I pull for all the teams.
As do I. And we've talked about this before. There are three teams that kind of bridge the two cities. The Capitals, for one, definitely the most popular. D.C. United, there's a lot of Baltimore fans that are D.C. United, people in Baltimore that are D.C. United fans. And the Wizards, too, because the Wizards used to play in Baltimore, and Baltimore has no basketball. So, yeah, when the Wizards have been good in the past, people in Baltimore, I've met people from Baltimore that have come down to Wizards games at the Verizon Center. So, you know, so to say that these cities totally hate each other is not true. So.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get back onto the Ravens.
Sorry.
I think, no, it's okay. It's certainly, I think, an interesting discussion point. But a lot of people have made a big kind of deal this year about whether Joe Flacco is an elite quarterback or not. And I think you said on the show a couple weeks ago that the only way to kind of silence those critics or the people that kind of doubt whether he is, in fact, elite would be to just keep on winning. And, you know, look, it's his second year in a row in the AFC Championship game. And this one, he out-dueled Tom Brady. So the question I ask you, Dan, is it safe to say that Flacco is an elite quarterback, or do we have to wait for him to win a Super Bowl? I think the conversation is perhaps a little bit ridiculous. The guy's played lights out since the Ravens have drafted him. Sure, he's hit some snags along the way, but I think that happens to a lot of NFL quarterbacks.
You've known me for a lot of years, and you know that I'm a numbers guy and a stats guy. And I like numbers and stats. And I'll tell you what, okay, what is it, 4-5 years in the league? 5 postseason appearances, okay? He now Joe Flacco now has the best road playoff record in the NFL, 6-4. He has won more playoff road games than any quarterback in the history of the NFL. You go into Denver and you beat Peyton Manning. You go into Foxborough, Massachusetts, and you beat Tom Brady. He knocked out two of the most elite quarterbacks in the NFL to get to the Super Bowl. Yes, he's an elite quarterback.
Yeah, and this wasn't these performances weren't managing the game and just, you know, not – you know, making big mistakes and just allowing the defenses, you know, look, I got a lot of respect for Trent Dilfer, but that was pretty much his job, was to manage the game, make a few plays here and there, but really not make the big mistakes and let the defense and the running game take over. Well, this year, you know, of course, they still have a very solid defense, if not as highly touted as some of their past units. And they've got a fantastic running back in Ray Rice, but Flacco has certainly come up big, and he's done more than just manage the game. I mean, he's made play after play, especially over the last two games, and he was fantastic in this one. And one of the things I think that's good about Flacco as well, I mean, he's making nice throws, but sometimes He would just throw the ball up in a favorable matchup where he gave his wideouts a chance to make plays. And you got the speedster in Torrey Smith. You got the big target in Bolden, and Bolden was fantastic.
And Dennis Pitta, who's been fantastic as a tight end. So, I mean, you know, he's got the great receiving core in those three guys.
Yeah, and he's running the offense the way he wants to now, where he's doing a lot of no huddle, and it was just a fantastic performance for the Baltimore Ravens in general. Now, at the beginning of this game, it looked like the Ravens' defense might have some trouble slowing down Tom Brady. And I mean, let's be honest, that's no big surprise. Tom Brady's a fantastic quarterback. Whether you like the guy or not, you gotta.
Yeah.
I know you're not a big Brady fan, Dan, but you got.
I don't like him, but you know what? Is he a great quarterback? Yes, he is. I don't like him.
One of the best to ever play the game. So Flacco, in consecutive weeks now, has bested two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, Tom Brady being a 3-time winner and Peyton Manning being winner of a sole Super Bowl. But
Peyton Manning, I mean, that statistically is the greatest quarterback in the last decade to play football. You know, statistic wise, not counting Super Bowls, but everything else, passing and touchdowns and all that. Yeah, he's the best. Okay, and he beat the best. That's how you know, who was it? Rocky Balboa. How you become the best is you take on the best and you beat the best. And Joe Flacco has beaten the best, my friend. He has beaten the very best. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I think we can put that idea that Flacco is an elite to rest. I certainly think he is, and I think he's done more than enough to prove it. Now,
of course the
Super Bowl victory really cements that, and I think
the clowns, our wonderful buddies at ESPN have been talking about Colin Kaepernick and his great, you know, oh, we put him in after 12 games, or, you know, Alex Smith goes down and he's taking us to the Super Bowl. So he's really become a darling of the media, this guy, Colin Kaepernick. It's kind of the way, it almost reminds me of the way Tom Brady, you know, when Brady first went in, when Drew Bledsoe went down. You know, that they seem to really like this guy. And, I mean, he's a good quarterback, but, you know, give Joe Flacco some damn credit.
Yeah, so this game against the Patriots, it wasn't quite as close as the game against the Broncos, but it was still a pretty intense contest for most of the game. The Ravens were able to pull away late in the match, but this one wasn't in quite as much doubt as the Broncos game was. This is a Patriots team that consistently gets there, but I have to wonder if maybe the window is shutting down on them because Brady's still playing at a high level. I certainly still think he can help his team win their division for the next 3 years. But beyond that, I think the window for the Patriots is closing, whereas for the Ravens, like you said, Flacco's only been in the league for 5 years. So, I mean, this guy's got a lot more opportunity to lead this team. And I imagine
you could get another 5 years out of him, you know, easily if he stays healthy, Flacco. So he could.
Well, with Ray Lewis departing, Dan, who's the face of the Ravens? You know, is it Joe Flacco?
Flacco
is it Ray Rice?
They win the Super Bowl, Joe Flacco becomes, and they've already got the motto, Wacko for Flacco. I mean, I say it all the time. So, you know, yeah, he becomes the face.
All right, and then let's look ahead a little bit. Sorry, I know we're not talking too much about the game. It's kind of a week removed, and I'm really more interested in looking forward to the and by the way, I think you mentioned it, but Foxborough, not an easy place to go and win a playoff game.
No, it's hard to beat Tom Brady in the snow. Everybody remembers the infamous snowball screw job of 2001 against the Raiders. You know, it's hard to win there.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's look ahead to the Super Bowl, the horrible, if you will. And one of our good friends, Ada Dizdar, loves to talk about his affinity for wrestling bleeds into his love for sports. And he often, sometimes I think he's joking and sometimes I'm not really sure if he's joking or not, talking about professional sports being booked. I can only imagine what he was saying about this one.
Oh, he was in vintage out of form, you know.
Rare form, yeah.
Rare form, exactly. I mean, you know, I watched almost all the games with him, yeah. So, and I was joking with him. I said, well, I guess next year they need a Manning Brothers Super Bowl, right? And he's like, that's right. So, yeah.
So, I mean, look, I think me and you are smart enough to know that this wasn't set up, but it's a great story. The media is running with it. And I think, you know, how can it not be the kind of feature topic in the Super Bowl? You got two great teams coached by in my opinion, two of the best coaches in the NFL right now. Harbaugh, a guy who started off as a special teams coach, Dan. He didn't make the typical jump from the special teams to maybe offensive or defensive coordinator and then to the head coach. He went straight from special teams to being a head coach, which I think is pretty impressive. And he's done a great job.
It's like the Jim Zorn story, except with a happy ending. Basically.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Jim Zorn jumped from being a quarterback's coach.
Goes to a head coach.
All the way. Yeah. I'm not sure how often that happens in the NFL. You see a special teams coordinator get the job. It seems like that more often than not falls to offense and defensive coordinators. So, look, both the Harbaughs have done a great job. Jim Harbaugh has done, fantastic with San Francisco, and the players really seem to like to play for him. Now, you got the two brothers. I would have to say of the two, they both have a certain level of intensity, but I think Jim Harbaugh takes it to another level. John's a little more reserved, where Jim is kind of a little bit more of the psycho Sid type.
Yeah, well, we all remember the infamous handshake between him and Jim Schwartz from the Detroit, from the Lions, and they nearly got in a fist fight on the sidelines after the game. So...
yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I think Jim Harbaugh was underestimating the power of the Schwartz that day, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, look, the 49ers certainly have a very good defense, so and it's the Super Bowl. So I don't know. I think the Ravens will be able to hit some big plays, but it might not come it might be a little more few and far between than it was in the game against the New England Patriots. Got some interesting matchups there. Of course, the former Redskin, Carlos Rogers, is going to have his hands full covering either Torrey Smith or Anquan Boldin.
There goes to show you another guy who, when he played in Washington, at times Carlos Rogers, always a bum, get rid of him, he stinks. Well, guess what? We get rid of him, but now he's on a Super Bowl team. It's unbelievable how this continually happens time and time again with guys that leave Washington.
Well, and this game is going to be interesting, Dan, because you got two of the better running backs in the league. I think it's going to be a vicious battle for control of the line of scrimmage, so certainly interested to see what happens in that. And look, it's...
with Frank Gore, right, as the...
Frank Gore, yeah. And look, in the end, Kaepernick is a little bit more mobile than Peyton Manning. And Brady, I wouldn't call him mobile, but is able to manipulate the pocket pretty well. And he's a lot more athletic than Peyton Manning anyways as far as using his legs. The Ravens are going to have their hands full keeping Kaepernick at bay. I mean, he has done a good job since he came in. I know that you're not a big fan of the fact that ESPN's maybe focusing on him more than Flacco. But a linebacker...
He's an interesting-looking guy. He's got all these tattoos, Colin Kaepernick, and, he certainly is exciting to watch. I was with my buddy George. We were watching our mutual friend George. We were watching the game against Green Bay, and it felt like watching, old Montana and, Tom Rathman with Frank Gore. It was like, wow. It's like, it felt like the Niners in the 1990s, which was kind of exciting for us, being that we were both big Jerry Rice and Joe Montana fans. But, but the media certainly has found a darling in Colin Kaepernick. But, hello?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, yes. Ray Lewis being the middle linebacker, I think that's going to be his big assignment in the game is to keep Kaepernick at bay. And, look, I love Ray. Sad to see him go, but he doesn't quite have the wheels he once did. I mean, that's probably one of the reasons he's retiring. And Kaepernick is very young, very athletic, and I think that could be something difficult for the Ravens. It's been a while since they've faced a scrambling quarterback, and they had some trouble stopping RG3. Now, granted, that was without Ray Lewis.
That's true. Oh, look, I think there's a new life in the Ravens ever since Ray's been back and announced his retirement. They just keep there playing with... You can just tell that there was some life in this team in the playoffs. It wasn't there in that Redskins game and other games I watched earlier in the season without Ray Lewis. I think, what he does bring more than anything is motivation and I think it's contagious. I think they all feel it when he's on that field and they want to play better and he makes them play better. It's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's pretty unbelievable to watch. Yeah.
And I have to wonder with the two brothers coaching, what that's like. I mean, just...
Never
happened. Can you imagine?
Well, we saw a preview of it in 2011. There was the Harbaugh. It happened on Thanksgiving night. in San Francisco, and I believe the Ravens won the game, if I'm not mistaken. I know the parents didn't go to the game. The parents stayed, you know, at home and watched it at home because they didn't want to be there. But I guess the parents will be there this time. My guess it'll be, you know, it'll probably they probably my guess is they won't be making too many they won't be talking to each other much this week before they probably will talk to each other after the game, you know.
Yeah, I think that would be a safe bet, and you have to wonder, you know, obviously one of the brothers is going to come out with their first Super Bowl title, and one is going to have just lost this, you know, massive game to his brother. I do believe that they're close, but, you know, do you think this is something that could actually damage? I don't think it really could, personally.
No,
but
they should both be proud of their accomplishments this year. They're both getting paid a lot of money, I know they'll be upset. I bet you it'll probably be awkward at first, but they'll get over it. Oh, come on, you know? I mean.
So, and my question for you now is, which brother do you think has done a better job with their franchise? Obviously, they're both doing great things. They're both in the NFL championship matchup, but.
Well, I don't know. Both kind of inherited kind of a mess when they first came on, you know, came to the team. You know, they didn't inherit a very good team. The Ravens weren't that good the last season they had Brian Billick. And the Patriots weren't that good, as much as I liked Mike Singletary as a coach, but they weren't that good when he was there. So
49ers,
both,
Patriots.
The 49ers, yes. What I said, yeah. So it's interesting. You know, both of them took over teams that were not in great shape, managed to turn things around, and it's pretty unbelievable. You know, God, talk about, you know, it's like they're basically the Mannings of coaching. That's what they are, the Harbaugh family. You know,
yeah, it's really a great story.
The Mannings make quarterbacks. The Harbaughs make coaches. Now
yeah.
They need a family to make wide receivers, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, well, and we'll see, you know, if it goes on to the next generation, if either of these guys end up having, you know, children that end up being successful coaches in the future. Because the Mannings, obviously, that went over two generations. It wasn't just now, of course, Archie Manning never quite, you know, never even came close to reaching the level of success his two sons have. On the NFL field, but he was a fantastic college quarterback. Your predictions in this one, Dan? How do you see it playing out?
I think the Ravens are going to win it. I feel good about the Ravens' chances. I think the biggest thing they have to worry about is Colin Kaepernick and his ability to run. They got to neutralize him, and you know they can stop Frank Gore. And I don't know, you know, the 49ers receiver core. I don't know exactly who they are. But, you know, are their names. But I think the Ravens got a good shot at winning this game. Flacco, you know, give the ball to Ray Rice. You know, you get some good passes to Torrey Smith and to Anquan Boldin and to Dennis Pitta. You know, the defense neutralizes Colin Kaepernick. I think they're going to win the game.
Yeah, and look, as good as the 49ers have played, I mean, they're obviously in the Super Bowl, but it wasn't, you know, too much before the regular season ended that they got absolutely spanked by the Seattle Seahawks. And we saw a number of big plays hit on that defense, as well as a good game from Marshawn Lynch on the ground. So I think this 49ers defense, while they are good, they are susceptible to the big plays. And the Ravens defense has been playing a lot better than they were during the regular season. But this game has the potential to be a very high-scoring one. And I think it should be one of the more exciting Super Bowls we've seen in a while. So
I think it will be
definitely
exciting.
Looking forward to
That's something that – and that's always good. What you hate is a blowout. As much as I want to see the Ravens, you know, personally win this game, I do want to see a competitive game. I don't want to see a 55-12, you know, blowout either. That's never fun to watch. It's boring at that point.
Yeah, and we start off by kind of talking about the I think we've said before in the show. We don't really feel there's a rivalry yet with Washington and Baltimore, and we had our buddy Tim Prentice on, and he said until there's kind of games played against each other with truly high stakes, it's kind of tough to really build that rivalry. Some people feel it more than others, it seems. It should be interesting to see how the locals react to this game, to see if people get on the Baltimore bandwagon.
I mean, I can speak for my family. My dad, who's a big Redskins fan, he's rooting for the Ravens. I mean, he feels that way. He doesn't hate them. He's not a big Ravens fan or anything, but he's like, I'm rooting for the Ravens. Why not? You know? And so that's one example.
Yeah, and the big argument that Redskins fans, I guess, have You know, most Ravens fans that I've heard will say to Redskins fans something along the lines of, okay, yeah, you won 3 Super Bowls, big deal, you've stunk pretty much recently. And that's unfortunately been true. Redskins fans usually fire back, okay, that's fine, you all have a Super Bowl, but we've got 3. Well, should the Ravens win this one, the gap closes a little bit there.
That's true. And I have found common ground in talking to people from Baltimore over the years. If they give me crap for being a Redskins fan, I always throw out there, hey, I'm an Orioles fan. Hey, you know, I know you guys like the Caps up here. So, you know, I've been able to find common ground with a lot of people from Baltimore, and then they're usually a lot more enjoyable to talk to, you know, because they'll start out giving you crap for maybe being a Redskins fan. But, hey, I'm an Orioles fan, you know. So, I mean, and then they'll be like, yeah, I like the Caps. I got no problem with them. I've had conversations with people like that in Baltimore, you know. What's great about one thing that is good about Baltimore, unlike D.C., is there aren't as many bandwagon fans. Like, D.C.'s full of Cowboy fans. You don't find many Cowboy fans up in Baltimore, thankfully. They actually like the Ravens, you know, which is good to see.
So, like I said, for me it's not quite as exciting as it would be if, say, the Redskins were in the Super Bowl, of course, but it's nice to see the team from my home state in the Super Bowl. And I'm certainly going to be rooting for them, looking forward to the game. All right, let's move on to the Washington Capitals, Dan. And I think we're all excited that the hockey season is back. The Capitals now have four games under their belt, and unfortunately,
four
losses to go with it. And, you know, okay, the last game against the Devils was close. They were able to overcome a 2-0 deficit and take the game into overtime and just in tormenting fashion – lose the game with 20 seconds left in the extra frame, you know, only seconds away from the shootout, has not, you know, they have not gotten off to a great start. Ovechkin hasn't really done anything yet.
I don't even think he scored a goal. Ovechkin, he's yet to score a goal. Joel Ward is leading the team right now with 2 goals. I mean, you know.
And look, you know, I know that a lot of people talked about Alexander Sjolman and that he didn't you know, kind of step up during big games. He was good during the regular season, but very inconsistent when it came to the postseason.
I'll say
look, it's lost him. We've got Mike Ribeiro, but he's a center, okay? So I think we're kind of losing something from Sjolman on the wing. I really do. I think it's hurt our attack.
And I think, you know, I don't know about watching. I've watched almost every game, and Neuwehr and Holtby, neither one has looked impressive in the, you know, playing goalie. Last game, I think it was Neuwehr nearly got his head knocked off against the Devils on Friday. He got hit pretty hard. I don't know. Adam Oates does not look happy on the bench. They'll show him on the sidelines. People have already made comments. He doesn't look like he's even enjoying this job yet, unfortunately. They showed signs of life in that game on Friday against the Devils. They came back from a 3-0 deficit from a 2-0 deficit, and then took it to overtime. And that's the first game where they've really shown some life. So maybe this tonight, you know, today, this game against Buffalo, you know, maybe they've woken up. Maybe finally Oates has woken these guys up, I hope.
Yeah, and look, you know, I think Barry Melrose actually picked the Caps to win this division. Now, you never want to say fifth game into the season that it's a must-win game, but I think especially in a strike-shortened season, I mean, we're talking – you know, very short NHL season this year. You don't have, you don't have the luxury of being able to kind of start off and slowly work your way into things. I mean, right now they're starting to build. I mean, it's not insurmountable yet, but you go 0-5 in a season. I think they're only going to have about 30 or 40 games. You cannot dig yourself this type of hole. Now, luckily, I mean, there's still time, and you know, 8 teams make the playoffs from each conference, but it is not looking good. And of course, it's not just been the fact that they've been losing, Dan. Okay, this last game was close, but you know, the season opener against the Lightning was actually pretty close. Well, it was a pretty close game. They ended up losing by 3 goals.
Yeah,
it was a close game, but at the end, the Lightning just completely took over the last 10 minutes of the game. You know, they lost to Winnipeg 4-2, and then got blown out by Montreal 4-1. So I mean, this is not—they're not just losing. With the exception of this last game, they've been losing by at least 2 goals, and they've been getting blown out.
Yeah,
they've
looked terrible. I mean, they've just looked terrible. Except this game against New Jersey, this is the first game where they looked, you know, like okay, maybe they, you know, maybe they're not as bad, maybe they're not horrible, maybe they just are rusty. Hopefully, that's what this is—they're just rusty. I don't know.
I mean, how much do we put on Adam Oates? How much do we put on, you know, we've got a healthy Mike Green now, so that's not an excuse. And how much do we put on the fact that, you know, our big-name players just aren't showing up?
Yeah, I don't know. Where is, you know, where in the world is Alexander Ovechkin, you know? No goals yet, okay?
Yeah, and look, to be fair, since he got that big contract, it wasn't – I mean, he still had great years, but I think over the last couple of years we've seen his production decline, least over the last couple of years. So
well,
he's not
– you know, and I have a theory about that, that a couple of years back they busted a doctor who they said was selling steroids to, like, Santana Moss and supposedly even other Capital players. And I remember after that time, man, all of a sudden Ovechkin's play started to decline, it seemed, around that time. And I don't know
if he's
taking anything. I can't, you know, there's no evidence, obviously, but that's just my little theory. But I could be wrong.
Well, and there's also just been talk that people have kind of not necessarily figured out Ovechkin, but found ways to frustrate him, found ways to keep him from having the space he needs. And I don't know, he just doesn't look quite as dynamic as he normally did out there. And
it could be,
you know,
something mental with him. I mean, he's now in this high profile relationship, engaged to this a very attractive tennis player. I don't know, maybe his head is in a, you know, is not all about hockey anymore like it used to be when he was younger. I mean, that can happen too. To quote Mickey from Rocky, women weaken legs. Especially in hockey, you need your legs.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, look, in the end, Ovechkin's still a great player, but I don't know. He's certainly not you know, where he was before, where you're talking about, you know, the argument of who's better, him or Crosby. I hate to say it, but I think that argument is unfortunately pretty clear at this moment, who is actually better.
Yeah, Sidney Crosby.
Who's got the Stanley Cup trophies,
yeah.
Who's got the game-winning goal in the Olympics, which unfortunately knocked the United States out of the opportunity to win the gold medal at the last Winter Olympics in Canada. And, I mean, I think the days, unfortunately, of seeing these kind of massive four-goal games from Ovi are probably over. And I have to wonder if the Caps, you know, shouldn't have done a little more to address their attack. Because right. now, they're not the same exciting Washington Capitals we once knew and loved. I still think they have, you know, certainly potential to make the playoffs. But like I said, you drop yourself into an 0-5 role, and I don't know. I mean, that's
and what'll be sad.
Winning breeds confidence. Losing does the exact opposite, right? So,
and what'll be sad to see if this is a decline of the Capitals, which I hope it's not. You're going to see all these people that became Caps fans over the last 5 years disappear. I saw this, you know, this happened with the Wizards. Remember the Wizards in the early 2000s when you got Michael Jordan playing, and then later with the Big Three with Arenas and Jameson and Caron Butler, and they made a couple of playoff runs. All of a sudden, there were Wizard fans again. But since they've been bad, you know, the Wizard fans have disappeared, and I'd hate to see that happen to the Caps. I'd hate to see watching the Verizon Center half empty half the night, nobody there, nobody cares, you know. But, you know, it's a very fickle town with most of the teams, with the exception of the Redskins, who have always had a loyal fan base. I don't know if I'm confident to believe that the fan base will stay loyal to the Capitals if they continue to lose. I will, but I know a lot of people will probably turn on.
Of course, same here. I mean, look, the Caps, it was, as you mentioned, a lot of bandwagon fans. They finally made the playoffs. They had the exciting Alexander Ovechkin, Nicklas Backstrom, and Alexander Sjöman, and their kind of big three offensively. And you know, overnight, it's not to say that there weren't Caps fans before, but they were never this big. And kind of almost overnight, they became a sensation in this area, and people fell in love with the Caps. And, I mean, you go out to a sports bar and during a Caps game now, and it's, you know, usually packed with people and, you know, rocking the red. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope it's not the decline of the Washington Capitals and there isn't a reason to worry about that. Let's see how they do today. You know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Again. So if they can bust out two or three in a row, some of this talk dies away.
Of course. Winning fixes everything in sports.
So. All right, and let's talk about the Washington Wizards. Speaking of, you brought them up, and it's Ted Leonsis' other franchise, and you know, last time we did the show, they had finally won two games in a row. They ended up winning the next match, and they actually went on a three-game winning streak. Unfortunately, lost against Sacramento in a very close game, one that was very frustrating to watch because they gave up a late lead in that one. But the Wizards, Dan, have now won 7 out of their last 10 games. So the Wizards games are actually fun to watch now that they're playing a pretty, you know, pretty exciting brand of basketball. And you can go into it knowing that your team actually has a chance to win, whereas before it was like, okay, do I really want to devote the time to not that I've stopped being a Wizards fan, but especially for me, it's tough to get up, you know, really early in the morning to watch these games, which are off and on at, you know, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. Now they're, and I don't know if the playoffs is a possibility though. I suppose if they keep playing at the level they are, it's not totally out of the question. But yeah, I mean, they're playing well. They're getting wins over solid teams. Of course, beating the Bulls last night, and I think you know, it's no surprise that coincides with the return of one Mr. John Wall, who's playing fantastic. Started off his first several matches coming off the bench, but I don't know. Did you get to see the game against? It was before the Bulls game. I want to say it was against.
They had a game on Friday, actually, and I did not watch much
Minnesota,
of it.
I'm sorry, Minnesota, and John Wall had a couple spectacular passes. I mean, one where he threw the ball between his legs for an assist. I mean, just, you know, fantastic stuff out of Wall. You know, look, the guy can score, but I think the thing he brings that's most important to this team is his passing ability, his ability to set the offense up, and, of course, the high tempo that he plays at. John Wall said, you know, he feels like a lot of people have kind of written him off as an afterthought after this long, you know, this long injury. And he felt like, okay, he's got a lot to prove now coming back, you know, basically saying, don't forget about me. I'm still the guy that was drafted, you know, number one overall, you know, the future of this franchise. And he said, I'm going to have a lot to prove. But he said, that's all right, I'm going to do it. And I'm, of course, paraphrasing here, but I think the guy's on a mission, and he's been great since he came back.
Yeah, without question. I mean, basically everybody's been saying, well, we're going to, you know, wait till Wall gets back, wait till Wall gets back, and guess what? Wall's back, and we're not in last place anymore. We're now tied for last with Charlotte in the Southeast. So, I mean, you know, this team went from being the laughing stock to all of a sudden, hey, they're not so bad.
Yeah, like I said.
And you know,
7 out of 10. Won 4 in a row at home, and they actually had a sellout crowd for the Bulls game. So, like you said, you start winning, you start selling tickets.
You start selling tickets, and the Bulls are quite popular because they're good again. But that's a big win. I mean, that's a team that, you know, is certainly good now. The Bulls, and we beat them, and John Wall had 7 assists, and Okafor led the team with I think 16 points. So,
He had 15 points and 16 rebounds in that one. So.
Oh, okay. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty impressive. I mean, who would have thought that? I mean, I don't, you know, yeah, I was like, God, this is going to be terrible. The Wizards are horrible this year. You know, it's just good. But, hey, they keep it, like you were saying, like they keep this up. Maybe they could make the playoffs. Who knows?
I still think that's probably a far-fetched idea, but, you know, why not have some hope, you know? Know what's going to happen, and of course this was a Bulls team, this victory, that is without Derrick Rose right now, so that you know, the Bulls quite as good without them, but they're still a good team, and they still got Carlos Boozer, still got Joakim Noah, and Rip Hamilton, former Wizard. It's always a big win, I think, when you can beat the Bulls, and it was kind of getting nasty in this one. Boozer was playing very physical with Okafor. I think there was some frustration going on. But you talked about Okafor having a good game. Nene had a good game. You know, Martell Webster's really stepped up. He's proven, I think, that you know, he's starting right now, but maybe next year he'll be a guy coming off the bench. But this is a team that does have some depth, and it's almost like John Wall was just that missing component, because it's not just what John Wall does on the court with his own stats. As I mentioned, he's the guy that runs the offense. He's a playmaker. He helps other guys make big plays. He has that kind of it factor that a point guard has. He's got the handles. He knows how to dribble. He's very fast. He's very efficient and sometimes flashy but accurate passer. And, you know, he's improved his jump shot. But I think the biggest thing that he brings to the table is that he makes other players around him play better, which is, I think, you know, the kind of Magic Johnson trait, I think the most important thing in any point guard. Mm-hmm. And John certainly does that. And it's not just been what he's been able to contribute, but he's gotten his teammates to contribute a lot better. And, hey, the Wizards actually have some consistent low-post scoring now. When you see that Okafor has always been a solid defensive player, guy that's able to pull down a lot of rebounds and block shots, but he's you know, chipping in 10 and 15 here and there. You know, I still think averaging maybe around 8 or 9 points. You got Nene's been playing great. He's a fantastic passer as well for a big man. And Kevin Serafin's been pretty solid. So I think the Wizards, you know, even if they don't make the playoffs this year, if they can keep, you know, everybody with John Wall being the centerpiece healthy, this is a team that probably can make the playoffs in 2 years, like I said. Maybe even next year, who knows? I like Bradley Beal a lot, and I think he's only going to get better as well. He's kind of shown some flashes of his potential. He's a fantastic shooter.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and we'll see what happens. It's exciting. It's actually exciting. Who would have thought? Wizards basketball, exciting to talk about. So.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to some baseball. Plenty of baseball news right now. Do you want to start with the O's or the Nets? Maybe we should start with those, because...
Start with the O's.
There is some set, of course.
Heavy Hearts, legendary Orioles manager, probably the greatest manager to ever manage the Orioles, you know, taking them to, he won them a World Series, and he took
didn't he? They won the World Series the year after he left, unfortunately. So someone else came on and kind of took Earl Weaver's work and was able to complete the product. But yeah, he never actually did win a World Series with the Orioles, but you know, countless playoff appearances, you know, very high winning percentage, and like you said, what many would call the greatest manager in Baltimore Orioles history, and really a pioneer in the managing field in baseball. He's a guy that was able to he was very inspirational. He would fire his players up. He was very good at managing a roster, and he was a big proponent of using the long ball, and that was certainly a big component of his successful Orioles teams. And the guy was passionate, Dan. He was one of the first guys who really kind of also pioneered the art of arguing with the umpires.
Yeah.
And I think he was the first guy who would turn his hat around backwards to really make it a nose-to-nose confrontation.
He wasn't a warm and fuzzy kind of guy, I guess. He was kind of – he had a he had a very love-hate relationship with Jim Palmer, which I guess got better after after Palmer retired. They've managed to patch things up and get along, but I guess they didn't get along too well when he played in Baltimore under Weaver.
Well, you know, these things happen, but
But you know, Earl, you know, they retired his number. They built a stat. You know, this past year in Baltimore, they built several statues to the greatest Orioles players of all time. You know, Earl Weaver, Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken, Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson, and Jim Palmer. And I watched, I remember watching Earl Weaver's speech, and he said that the thing that he wanted the most, the thing that shocked him the most about coming back to Baltimore is how many people remembered him. You know, even people that weren't even alive when he played. And you and I don't really remember, you know, when he managed. I'll be honest, we don't really remember when he managed. But, you know, if you're a Baltimore Orioles fan and you know your history about the Baltimore Orioles, he's the greatest manager to ever manage a team. And I'm sure everybody knows that. That's a staunch Orioles fan has been told about the great Earl Weaver. And Earl said that's what always surprised him, is when kids would ask him for his autograph, people that clearly were not alive when he managed, you know.
Yeah, and like I said, one of the greats. We've had a lot of good coaches throughout, you know, all of the five major sports here in the DMV region, but a DMV great, and you know, left us too early. Earl Weaver will definitely be missed.
I want to read what Cal Ripken said about him real quick. Is that all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
His passion for the this is what Cal Ripken said about him. His passion for the game and the fire with which he managed will always be remembered by baseball fans everywhere, and certainly by all of us who had the great opportunity to play for him. Earl will be missed, but he can't and won't be forgotten. So that's what Cal Ripken said about it. The great Cal Ripken said about the passing of Earl Weaver. So.
Yep, man, he certainly will be missed. Let's talk about some of the things that are going on in the present with the Baltimore Orioles, as the contracts of both manager Buck Showalter and front office top dog Duquette, have been extended, and I think well-deserved, even though some people are questioning why the Orioles didn't do a whole lot in the offseason, maybe at least try to get one more arm in their starting rotation, especially when you look at what the Toronto Blue Jays have done. I mean, if you see what they've done, Dan, it's going to be tough for the Orioles to replicate. I still believe, but, man, I mean, the Blue Jays are looking like the real deal, adding, you know, Jose Reyes, Cy Young winner, Dickey from the Mets, and another start. I want to say Shields. It's just, I don't know, man.
Just remember something about with the Washington Redskins. How many times has Dan Snyder won the draft, so to speak? You know, I won the draft. I've got all these great guys. I made all these great signings. I made a dream team. And guess what? These teams a lot of times don't go anywhere and don't win. So, you know, you can't always put too much stock in that. So
we've seen the Yankees make big off-season overhauls like this, and I think it's been a long time since we've seen a team do this much though in one off-season. It should be interesting. But I think, you know, as far as Showalter and Duquette go, the team certainly overachieved last year, as many would consider it, and have to say, totally deserving.
I mean, Buck Showalter is a manager who he's almost like, I've said this before, he's like Marty Schottenheimer in baseball. He's a guy that's basically gone everywhere he's gone. He's taken teams to postseasons. He's turned teams around. The Yankees, the Diamondbacks, the Rangers, and then they go on to win a World Series or something after he leaves. But he certainly is a winning manager, and just like in Baltimore, he's done it again. He's taken a team that went for 14 years were horrible, and now they're a contender. You know, that's pretty remarkable. And I'd say Dan Duquette is a very good. He seems like a real sharp guy. I think that the two of them together, they're working well together so far, and I think we'll continue to see that. So that was definitely a good move by Angelos to bring both these guys back. So, obviously.
And Duquette was able to, I think, bring in some key pieces like, the outfielder that we got from the Braves. What's his name? Gosh, I'm drawing a memory blank here.
Shoot.
Yeah, this rarely happens to me. I don't know why, but this is going to embarrass me. I'll have to look it up, but I don't know why. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But they didn't have the strongest rotation in the world. And they were still able to be effective. Obviously the key to that team is the bullpen. And Showalter has done a great job with the groceries that Duquette has given him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, exciting times in Baltimore, and I think well deserved. Also, the Nats have made some exciting moves. We all know that the bullpen kind of imploded and was one of the main reasons that, they failed to get past the NL Divisional Series. And, Tyler Clippard had a kind of a terrible finish to the year. And Drew Storen imploded during the final game with a chance to get the series-winning save. And what have we done now? We've signed the Yankees closer, Rafael Serrano. So to me, it's a double win. Not only did the Nationals get better in signing a fantastic closer in Soriano, but we were able to weaken the New York Yankees. So very excited about that.
Always love when we steal, you steal somebody away from the Yankees. That's always a good feeling. So,
yeah, I mean, this guy's been phenomenal for the New York Yankees. So I'm pretty excited about it. And by the way, it's Nate McLouth who we were talking about with the Orioles. I don't know why I was drawing a blank there.
Okay.
I think now, Storen and Clippard, they both have the ability to close, though you have to wonder at the way Clippard's season finished, if that was really the case. These guys have both been setup men before, and I think they could still do that. So now you got two guys who are very capable setup men, and I would have to say Soriano's going to get the closer's job, though Johnson said nothing is set in stone just yet. You're talking about, you can kind of chalk off in a lot of instances who's going to be pitching the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning there. which means that the starters who have been so great for the Nats, and now we have Steven Strasburg back, you know, back at full capacity, no shortened season. They just got to get to the sixth inning, you know, and with this bullpen looking the way it is, you know, hopefully we won't have to overwork our starters. So very excited about that for the Nats. And then, of course, they also traded Michael Morse, the Beast. So we're not going to hear any more Take Me On at Nationals Park. So I will miss him, and I think he's a fantastic player on the team. You know, certainly I think it weakens our bench a little bit, but we do have a guy who could play, who could spot start in the outfield and at first, the young Tyler Moore, who's got a lot of pop in his bat. And we ended up getting A.J. Cole back in the trade. He was the centerpiece on our end of the deal when we sent him to get Gio Gonzalez from the Athletics. So that was the main piece the Athletics got. We're getting him back now, and I guess some people are questioning, did we get enough in this trade? I'm kind of on the fence in this one. I think injuries happen in baseball, and having Michael Morse waiting in the wings would certainly be a valuable asset, but the Nats have proven time and again that they're committed to doing things right, to being set up for the future. They want to win now, and they've certainly made moves, you know, a la signing Soriano for the short term, but they're also, you know, they've got a fantastic farm system. It's the main reason where we are right now, and they're determined to keep that farm system stockpiled. So Rizzo seems to really like A.J. Cole, and I can't really argue with the way Rizzo has gone lately. Yeah.
No, I don't argue with Mike Rizzo with much of what he's done so far. He's done a great job. So why wouldn't he continue? I mean, you know, certainly a great general manager and smart guy. I don't know.
So it's like I said, for the Orioles, it might be a little bit tough, but things are looking up for the Washington Nationals. Certainly. Very solid offseason. All right, let's close out the show with a little bit of DC United news, and actually plenty of moves made by DC United. They drafted left back Adam Kemp out of the University of Maryland, probably, I think, what most people thought, A, the best outside back in the draft, and B, it was probably the biggest area of need for DC United. So, you know, another Maryland player joins fellow Terps Ethan White and someone else who we acquired, Casey Townsend, a striker from the University of Maryland, who was drafted by Chivas USA last year. Very exciting talent. I know my buddy Chris Webb, who I used to do the Major League Soccer Talk podcast with, and I'm definitely going to have to get him on the show in the future. Wish we could have had him on this week, because I think it would have been interesting to hear his input on this. He's a big fan of Casey Townsend. He was drafted last year as the fifth overall selection. So DC United was able to trade for him, and that's good news for DC United. They're kind of rehauling their striking core. I like the fact that we have brought in several strikers now in the offseason because Chris Pontes, I think, has proven that, you know, he could play as a striker or a midfielder, but the way he played last year, you probably want him in the midfield. So all these moves, I think, kind of free up Chris Pontes to do just that. So Casey Townsend now on DC United. Like I said, Adam Kemp was drafted. And we signed a midfielder from Indonesia. He's on loan from Belgium club. I want to say it's pronounced Vise. But he's from Indonesia. And, of course, you know, one of our owners, Eric Thohir is from Indonesia. So pretty cool to see that. And he's a young attacking midfielder. He's got, from everything I've read, very good technical ability. He was playing in Belgium. He's also played in the Uruguayan Premier Division. And he's played for a couple Dutch sides. So, you know, at a young age, he's already been around. I think that certainly helps us. He can play midfield or forward. So this is a DC United team that I think will continue to be good. We're going to have a healthy Dwayne De Rosario back next year. We've addressed our the hole, at least, we had at left back, and unfortunately all these moves I'm going to mess up his name here, but Syamsir Alam, who's the Indonesian attacking midfielder we signed, and acquiring Casey Townsend, that has actually it's kind of forced, if you will, DC United to part ways with Long Tan, the Chinese striker. He's been waived by the team. And I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but they also signed another academy player who's a striker as well.
Yeah.
So got a nice young striking core there. And it's going to be interesting to see how they rotate these guys around, because they've still got the Colombian Leonard Pajoy and or Pajoy, I'm not really sure how you correctly pronounce it. And then, of course, they've also got Hamdi Salehi, the designated player. So nice. DC United not staying static in the offseason. Now, a lot of these guys are signing, including the striker we have on loan from Brazil and attacking midfielder we have on loan from Brazil. Maybe not household names, but they're getting young talent. That they're pulling it from different parts of the world, whether it be South America, in this case Indonesia. So
it's going to be a big international affair at the games. You got Indonesian fans probably showing up, Brazilian fans, Colombian fans, American fans. It's going to be exciting. So be like the UN.
Definitely look forward to DC United, and hopefully I'll be coming home for at least a couple weeks in the summer. And that will be probably the main ticket in town, yeah? I guess there will be some professional baseball. Maybe I'll get out to a Nats game, but definitely want to get out to a DC United game. And, of course, the schedule has been released. We played a friendly with Columbus Crew the other day and won 1-0. But United's home opener is going to be against Houston Dynamo in Houston, and it's going to be on NBC Sports Network. March 2nd, so not too far away.
That'll be in March, right?
March 2nd, yeah.
Okay.
That's home opener is going to be against Real Salt Lake on the 9th.
I may try to make it to the home opener this year. I'm going to try.
Yeah, should be fun. So,
yeah.
All right, and in the meantime, I think pretty action-packed show. Kind of news from each of the five major sports. As we've talked about since the beginning of the show, kind of a revival for DC, Maryland, and Virginia sports right now, and it's only better.
And it's exciting, and this week, DC area, DC metro, DC DC Maryland, Virginia area, you better be ready to rock the purple and, Wacko for Flacco. So.
Well, I'm not rocking any purple and black, but I will certainly be rooting for them. And
are you Wacko for Flacco?
See, I can't go that far, man. I said, I'm rooting for the Ravens, but I'm just – I don't want to come across as one of these bandwagon jumpers. Because, truth be told, I'm not a Ravens fan, but I am rooting for them. Plenty of friends who are Ravens fans, and I have no reason to root for the 49ers. So
I'm going to be drinking some Natty Bo and eating a crab cake I plan to on Sunday during the game. So.
All right, yeah, ship one out to Moscow for me.
I will. it's coming.
Fair enough. All right, email us, dmvsportswire@gmail.com. Any thoughts? And maybe you can weigh in on this Redskins, Ravens stuff. Should Redskins fans be rooting for the Ravens? Is there a reason for either side to feel animosity towards the other? Is there really a rivalry? Email us, dmvsportswire@gmail.com.
And check us out on Twitter at DMV Sportswire on Twitter. So.
All right. And in the meantime, goodbye, DC. Goodbye, Maryland. And goodbye, Maryland.
Goodbye.